as the oil poured into the Gulf, Tillerson pushed ExxonMobil's talking points into Washington's political ecosystem. He characterized the accident as a dramatic departure from the industry norm in deepwater drilling. ExxonMobil would never have made the mistakes BP made, he said. Moreover, the recklessness of BP's operation should not catalyze intensive new regulation, because BP's failure was so unusual. Tillerson spoke so forcefully about BP's apparent errors that he sounded as if he might be auditioning to appear as an expert witness at BP's liability trials. It appears clear to me that a number of design standards were, that I would consider to be the industry norm, were not followed, Tillerson declared. We would not have drilled the well the way they did. Tillerson arrived one evening that summer at the Metropolitan Club, near the White House, a stuffy building near the White House, for a private dinner with influential editors and writers sponsored by the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Over roast beef and Yorkshire pudding, Tillerson went after BP's management. There were many warning signs during the Macondo operation, but BP suffered from a culture of looseness and rule-bending, Tillerson said. BP had fine engineers and was technologically impressive, Tillerson added, but the corporation did not emphasize safety or individual accountability. They've always been an outlier, he said. We work with them all over the world, and we've seen this. Tillerson spoke blithely about the potential ecological damage that might result from the accident. Because Americans reacted so skittishly to the possibility that seafood might be poisoned, commercial fishing in Gulf waters slowed sharply during 2010, even outside of areas restricted by the government, so fish populations would flourish. You like to fish? The best fishing in the world's going to be in the Gulf next year, he predicted. If Washington now overreacted to the deepwater horizon and limited offshore drilling for many years, this would be bad policy, he said, but it would pose no strategic threat to ExxonMobil's business. We've got opportunities all over the world. The swagger was vintage Exxon, but the public policy at issue was the corporation's philosophy of risk management. Just 10 days after the deepwater horizon exploded, a ruptured ExxonMobil pipeline dumped about 1 million gallons of oil in coastal areas of eastern Nigeria, soiling shorelines dotted by impoverished seaside villages. The affected area lay far from American television news bureaus, and its kidnapping gangs made it a risky place to travel in any event. The spill barely registered. Not all accidents can be prevented, Tillerson and ExxonMobil's lobbyists acknowledged. Even if one accepted that ExxonMobil's own safety and self-regulatory record was exemplary relative to peers, and even if one assumed that the corporation's relatively vigilant internal practices would endure indefinitely without ever deteriorating again, how did Exxon propose to ensure that every other corporation in the oil industry adopted its standards, if not by government regulation? Tillerson volunteered that ExxonMobil's safety systems were not proprietary, and he would share them with other companies, but it was neither practical nor appropriate for the corporation to police its competitors. In comparison with other regulatory schemes, supervision of oil drilling and transport faced an unusual challenge. The incentive to find new oil in a constrained world drove all of the major companies to risky frontiers. Resource nationalism, the rise of global state-owned companies with favored positions in their home countries, and the struggle for annual reserve replacement at gigantic corporations like ExxonMobil had led them to deep water, to weak and conflict-ridden states with vulnerable populations, and increasingly to the Arctic ice, where cold temperatures might render conventional spill cleanup techniques inoperable. The National Commission concluded that BP's blowout drilling in pioneering conditions in the Gulf of Mexico was not a statistical inevitability, because sound management and regulation could have prevented the accident. Yet the record of oil accidents worldwide over 30 years was one of repetitive spills and failures, even at the best practitioners, such as ExxonMobil after the Valdez. In commercial aviation, idiot-proof safety systems and close regulatory inspection had reduced accidents to an overall nuisance level, although they were obviously devastating when they occurred. Marketplace incentives played a crucial role in commercial aviation. The public demanded protection from reckless airplane operators and pushed airline companies into compliance. Crashes repelled customers. By comparison, in oil's case, the environmental consequences of a single accident could be very severe, but they did not threaten the lives of oil customers or change their purchasing behavior. The damage was typically remote, and for consumers, gasoline remained a necessity. Marketplace incentives did work constructively. The high financial and reputational costs of the Exxon Valdez and the Deepwater Horizon served as a powerful deterrent to corporate recklessness at drilling sites. But an occasional catastrophic error could be managed and survived, as ExxonMobil had demonstrated, and BP probably would. And because the need to find oil in hard places pushed corporations into greater risk-taking, the overall effect was very different from aviation. It was as if United Airlines, to remain profitable and viable in the long run, had to fly faster and higher each year, while managing all the risks that came along with that stretching of its capabilities.